Blog Talk Radio.
A lot of artists now, because the internet is still available to everyone,
I find a lot of artists go on the internet and they just pull up whatever they see and classify it as period makeup. But the biggest downfall is that you want to pull up things that are authentic to the period and not someone else's interpretation of that period. And that's crucial because, you know, you go on and you pull up something and it kind of sort of looks like what you think the period should look like. But then when you really start to delve into your research, you find that, okay, the eyeliner is really from, say you're doing a 1920s look, and you pull up somebody's work. It might be an eyeliner from the 1960s, coupled with, you know, blush application from the 40s, coupled with, you know, a lip style from the 20s. So it might not be all authentic to that actual period that you're working on. So it's crucial for you to look at something that's actually from the period that you want to duplicate to get right. your research to be as accurate as possible. So when you go on and you pull, say, for example, there's a lot of stuff on the internet from Kevin Aucoin. But that's Kevin Aucoin's interpretation of that era, and it's not necessarily authentic.
And can I go on it? And can I say this? And you can correct me if I'm wrong. But to me, it seemed like that's his. That was his current day or at that time interpretation of that era.
And most definitely, most definitely. That's why I tell people they need to go on and look for things, the actual application techniques from. If you're doing 1920s, things from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever it is, look for movies that were shot during that time period. Mm-hmm. You know, go into stores and pull books that reflect that era. Don't be lazy and rely just on the internet to provide you with information because you might not find all the information you're looking for.
And
What?
I'm sorry, you just said to look at movies that were done in that time period. Do you think it's better to look at the movies that were actually done in that time period versus looking at a movie where they interpreted that time period?
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. Because, again, it's another artist's interpretation of the period. And who's to say that that artist nailed it on the head?
Right.
You don't know. I've looked at a lot of period movies, and they're not actually accurate to the era.
Okay.
The blush placement might be off. The eyeshadow color might be off. And you have to be very mindful that the colors that you're using were invented for the time that you're doing.
Right.
I mean, that's really crucial. So you have to be very mindful of that those colors were invented. You know, if you're doing a 1920s look and you're using hot pink fuchsia lip gloss, well, it wasn't invented yet. You know, so you have to be very, very, if you do an 80s application of blush for 1920s, it's not accurate to the period. That's not how a blush was placed back then. The nails are crucial. I mean, it's a combination of hair, makeup, nails, and wardrobe. And
right. What
happens sometimes is that, you know, the period, I mean, the hair and the wardrobe really dictate the period. You can kind of fudge makeup a little bit, but the hair and wardrobe really dictate the period. So when you look at something, and a lot of times, too, why you can't rely on a movie that, say, was done to reflect that era, because there's a lot of creative licenses within that movie.
Yes.
For example, when I did Eve's Bayou, the actual era of the movie was the late 50s, early 60s. However, the movie, the director wanted a really beautiful look, and the 1940s look was just such a spectacular look with that red lipstick, so clean, so beautiful, so perfectly applied. And women just looked absolutely glamorous during that time. And so Eve's Bayou, even though it took place at that time, the licensing that I had to work with is that my characters were Lynn Whitfield and Debbie Morgan were our principal ladies. Now, Lynn Whitfield came from Atlanta, a big city in comparison to the Bayou. Small city. Debbie Morgan was from a small, the Bayou. The Bayou was, you can easily say that the Bayou was 10 years behind a big city in dress and in fashion, right? So the creative license that I had to play with, I had a 10-year gap to play with. So technically, if it was the late 50s, I could do the late 40s and get away with it.
Right.
And that's how we did it. We did the late 40s, even though when you look at those clothes were 50s, full skirts, except when you saw Lynn Whitfield, she was very fashion forward. Everything was on point and very well done. When you saw Debbie Morgan, she was more homegrown. So the creative license was Lynn Whitfield from the big city, very fashion forward, up to date, knows what's going on. Debbie Morgan, who never left the Bayou, was much more homegrown, you know, did it herself kind of application. So I had the creative license to play with that.
Right.
You see, so that's really important to know. And a lot of times when you're doing your characters in a film, you have to give them a life. So that really helps you determine where you're going to go with the makeup.
Right,
you know?
Absolutely.
Where you're going to go. So because a lot of times your character's life is not scripted necessarily. It might just say, you know, 20-something-year-old or 30-something-year-old, you know. And you have to give, works in a law firm, housewife, four kids, you know, widowed, you know, upscale, suburban, city. You know, you have to give that character a life in order to help you come up with the whole makeup look. You know, 1920s, you know, is it going to be 1920s? Is she, a flapper? You know, all of those things come into play, and that determines flapper as opposed to housewife.
Right.
And then that will determine where you're going to go with the makeup, huh? You know? So it makes a tremendous difference.
Absolutely. Now, besides watching films that were done in that time period, what else should we do as far as our research is concerned?
Oh, I am a big stickler and just going for old magazines and going through photo albums and yearbooks. Yearbooks are a great place. You know, thrift shops, to all those things to help you pull up something that's authentic to the period. You know, again, there's a lot of information on the internet, but you have to be able to sift through that information to gather that the stuff that's going to be appropriate for you to use. That's one of the keys. You have to be able to sift through that information, and a lot of times people don't sift through it properly. That's part of your research. You got to be able to sift through all of that stuff. You know. And that's the fun part to me, too, is actually discovering all these different things. And I buy books. You know, I've got a huge collection of books from you know, thrift shops and, you know, when the big bookstores are having their sales, you know, it's good to go in and you can get a lot of those books. And they're not necessarily makeup books. Because a lot of my information doesn't necessarily come from a makeup book per se. It may come from a costume book, some kind of fashion book. You know, it comes from so many different sources, not necessarily makeup per se. So, you know, I buy history books. I pick up all sorts. I always go through to see if there's something in there that I can look at, you know, and make it work for me.
Right.
So it's not necessarily a makeup book per se, but it's crucial to understand how the placement, you know, period makeup is all about placement.
Absolutely.
So you can place the rouge on the cheek and bring it down like a comma, and that's the 20s. Or you place it up on the cheek and work it all the way up into the hairline and do it like a V, and that's the 1980s.
Right.
So you have to be very mindful of that. And, you know, and I tend to focus more my classes on the 20s, 40s, 60s, because that's where a lot of the detail really goes. The other periods, I work in between them, you know, because of the subtlety and changes, but you can really see some definite changes in the 20s, 40s, and the 60s. The 80s,
right.
And then after, once you hit 1990, it's pretty much an amalgamation of everything.
Right. And
you know,
I have a detailed question. I have a detailed question about that at different periods, but I'll get back to that in a second. Someone from the chat room had a question, and then I have Viola on the phone line who wants to ask a question as well. Let's see here. Royal Mommy is asking in the chat room, if you did special effects makeup on Diane Carroll's character in that movie?
I didn't do, there was no special effects on her. I just literally applied, I forgot which white, it might have been a Ben Nye, it might have been a Ben Nye or Kryolan product I used on her, and then did heavy, heavy black eyeliner.
Okay.
I didn't
anything special.
No. That was the other thing, is working with the characters and making them, you know, making them work for me.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest things, is making the characters work for me. Took a lot of, it took a lot of research and,
mm-hmm.
and breakdown, you know, and that's what, you know, that's what I did. I did a lot of research.
Right. Now, Marietta, how did you start, because I know that period makeup is something that all makeup artists, particularly if you're going to, all makeup artists should know how to do it, particularly though if you're going to work in film and television. But how did you get so, I guess, well versed in this or so knowledgeable in this particular area of makeup?
I did so many period movies, and one of the biggest ones, Malcolm X. I had to do so much research. I ended up. Literally, I went through a lot. Even before Malcolm X, I think my first movie was on location was a period movie.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things in doing my research, I realized, especially when it came to darker skin tones, the magazines didn't have anything on darker skin tones in period because we weren't in the magazines.
Right.
So that was a rude awakening for me. So I collected a lot of information by going through people's photo albums and pulling things from the 40s and 50s and literally photographing them. And that really was how I started to build my research. And then I cataloged stuff. So I've got quite a few books that I cataloged based off of black women, white women, black men, white men, et cetera, with the hairstyles because, you know, it's not – period makeup is not just limited to women, it's also men.
Absolutely. That's very important.
So
very, very important.
You know, mustaches, beards, you know, goatees,
right.
All the above. It's not just limited to women. So.
And you know what? I think that's one area where you can't really afford to slip and mess up on is the men.
Oh.
And their hair and their facial hair and the hair on their
head.
Oh,
my goodness.
In a period film.
Most definitely.
I mean,
the sideburns, you know, the sideburns are such a big deal, and the mustaches are such a big deal. I mean, it makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. And, I mean, I've been on shows where you're working with, like, hundreds and hundreds of background and doing these different periods, and you have to get those sideburns right. You have to do it. Sometimes we would have to lay facial hair on some people just to get the look. You know, like I said, you even if if you slip up a little bit with, you know, the placing of something on the woman, you know, as far as her makeup is concerned, it may go unnoticed. But with the men, they'll catch those sideburns and that facial hair quick.
Oh, it makes a huge, huge difference. I mean, even when I did Malcolm X, you know, I had 40 makeup and hair people under me, and to supervise. And I tell you, making sure some days when you have 4,000 or 5,000 extras,
mm-hmm.
it's not easy. It's not easy, mm-hmm. but you know, all the camera has to do when you've got a Luma crane going through the audience. All the camera has to do is pick up that one person that looks wrong, and it blows the whole movie.
Yep, absolutely.
And it never fails. Absolutely. The camera always finds that one person. You know, and so my job was, I single-handedly, no matter how many people I had working with me, I went through that audience row by row by row by row.
You have to.
Because all you need is one of Elijah Muhammad's Muslim women.
Right.
And red nail polish.
Right. Or look, acrylic nails or something.
You know, red nail polish and red lipstick. That's all you needed. And trust me, we had several of them in the audience until I wiped it off. Or you could have Elijah Muhammad's core group in beards and mustaches. You tell me what core Muslim group you saw in beards
right.
and mustaches, you know? I mean,
right.
with that bow tie and suit, but not a beard and mustache. So, you know, those things made a huge, huge difference. And understanding that, you know, like doing your research so that you can challenge the director and say, sorry, but you can't shoot them looking like that.
Mm-hmm.
See, when you haven't done your research, there's nothing that you can do. Because
right.
they can say, this is what I want, but you can't challenge them. So, you know, it's hard. When I did the Jackson's and American Dream, same thing. Having the research was just, oh, my goodness, it just made a huge difference. It just made a huge, huge difference. And I know that, you know, there was a place in Los Angeles that I went to before. I think I was the first makeup artist to go into that place, Michael Oakes Archives. And I
mm-hmm.
went in there and I found it was like a gold mine. It's a place that photographers use, and no other makeup artist had ever been in there to do research. And I went in there, and Michael Oakes said he literally had every musician that ever came to Motown, every musician, every singer that ever came to Motown, he bought the entire Motown catalog.
Wow.
Photos. So I was able to get a ton of research. Photos on, you know, Dinah Washington and Ella Fitzgerald and, I mean, you just name it, Vera Vaughn, you just name it, I had a photo of her or him.
Right.
So I was able to collect so many photos of stars back then that I think nobody else had. I loaned my books out to several makeup artists in L.A. to do movies after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my books were so heavy that I actually took my binders to the shoemaker, compliment, thanks to Ruth Carter, she turned me on to that, and I had handles put under my binders so I can carry them around like book bags.
Right.
Yeah.
I've been for years putting together just things that I've researched and worked just so that I could have pretty much the same type of thing. I'm pretty sure yours is sterile, though. But I think it's something important that we should do is we should do research, collect some photos, you know, magazines, pictures, you know, and magazines and that kind of thing. Get as much as you can get your hands on, whether you need it or not.
Well, I don't think there's a makeup artist who should consider themselves a makeup artist unless they have a running morgue. You've got to have
right.
a running morgue. You have to. I mean, that to me is the sign of a true artist because that's what you use for reference. You know, that's what you need to have for reference. It's so crucial, you know.
Well, we have,
there's a question
biology.
Say that again. I didn't hear you.
Nothing. You can finish what you were saying.
No, I said this. Nicole Rogers had a question. How many assistants does one need for many extras? For that many extras? Well, for 4,000 extras, well, there were 50 makeup and 50 here. But you know, one of the things that you need to do when you're doing a period movie is with that many extras, I worked very closely with extras casting, so I gave them a package of even down to how the extras should set their hair. I mean, which, again, requires a lot of research. So I gave extras casting a package of how they should set the hair so that when you set the hair in that particular style, in that particular way, it guarantees that it's foolproof to for you to come out in a style that's very similar to the period, you know. What kind of rollers to use, how to do it, exact partings, what color lipstick they should come in, what, you know, everything. So that a lot of the extras did come camera ready and to a certain degree. And so, you know, you pretty much break down, say, probably technically probably 50 to 100 extras per person, because you're really not doing everyone, you know. You're not doing them, per se. You're only doing the featured ones. So out of that 4,000, maybe 100 of them are featured. The rest are just filler, you know. The rest are just filler. So that's pretty much, the camera's not going to see everyone. It's like, you know, the dancers that are featured dancers, those all would go through makeup and hair, and then all the other people that, you know, pretty much at the camera is going to cap that, the background that's going to surround the actors are the ones who usually get the camera time. So those are the ones you focus
right
on. You know, and a good extra, somebody who takes the job seriously, usually come as close to camera ready as possible, so you're not going from scratch. I tell you, and a lot of times, if they don't look right, it's easier to clean everything off than put anything on.
Right.
And then they just blend right in. You know, that's really one of the things to do. So it makes a huge difference. I see you have some questions popping up here.
Yeah. We have a question from Viola Nicholson on the line. Hello, Viola. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How are
Hi,
you?
Viola.
Hi. You just gave me a whole class. So it's amazing. Oh, my goodness. So whenever you come to Chicago, I'm there for your class. But anyway, I just want to give you a compliment as well for being in the industry for so long, and with Illusion Beauty just educating all the makeup artists, even like myself, on artists like you. And it's amazing. But my question is, as far as like you were putting on from the year, the 20s, the 40s, the 50s, and current, do you just work on theater, or so other artists be able to come with this question as well? Because so many artists get caught up on weddings and photo shoots, but you prepare yourself on everything on all levels. So what technique, do you change your technique on different projects and tools? Because I know that you were, even with the men, that was one of my questions as well, when you were saying about changing the mustache, and you also going to character as a makeup artist, and I understand that you kept using the word research. So do you as well go into character when you go on these films, on these projects?
Do I myself go into character?
Do you go into character as well to get a feel of your own art, to bring the characters into life?
You know, actually, Malcolm X was, I think, the one movie that I before I did that movie, I shaved my head bald, pretty much. I went into a complete fast, literally to get prepared for that movie, because I knew that it was going to be the hardest movie of my career that far, you know. And I'm glad I did, because I pretty much never slept on Malcolm X. I worked all the time. My mind never stopped moving, because there was so much to do and so many people to deal with and constant. So when I came home, my days were really, really long. I was putting in 19, 20-hour days pretty much. When I came home, I was always reading what's for the next day to prep myself. And I ran the show. I supervised the show. So when you have 50 people under you, you're hiring and firing people. And then in addition to doing that, then I had to design the whole look for Denzel, which was, you know, Denzel was a full-time job unto himself. Because I pretty much look more like Denzel than Denzel looks like Malcolm. I pretty much look more like Malcolm than Denzel does. So that was a full-time job. And to get him to look believable so that you wouldn't be distracted, it was a lot of work. Because, you know, we made lace wigs for him, lace wigs. You know, his hair had to be dyed constantly, mustaches, beard, you know, all of that stuff was individually applied. Like, I had a full beard made for him, but then I had to cut it down and apply it in, like, 3 or 4 different pieces. His mustache was applied in 2 pieces. Denzel's a method actor, so it took a lot of working, and he stayed in character. So it took a lot. It took a lot. He was just a full-time job to get to look like Malcolm X. So, yeah, for Malcolm X, I pretty much got in character, if you want to put it that way.
Well, that's one of my favorite. Wow, that's one of my favorite movies, and it shows that you put in a lot of work. That's one of my favorite movies, and I applaud you. I mean, it's amazing. You know, I applaud you. That's a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication. So, you know, hands down to you, and I applaud you. So if other artists want to get in contact with you, how will we get in contact with you? Are you on Facebook, Twitter?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter also. But you know what?
Okay.
I haven't really gotten into Twitter like I did Facebook. Twitter, I still tweet with Twitter, you know?
Right.
I can't get the whole thing down.
But you have the makeup down pack. You have the makeup and your art down pack.
I mean, even like the other day, I just did, I did a lot of period movies. I really did. I'm thinking about The Long Walk Home was period. Time to Kill was a period. The Long Walk Home was period, yeah. And my first movie, which was, what was the movie called? I don't even know what it's called. What was that movie? It was 1985. I went on location to Philadelphia. Bandstand. It was, oh my gosh. It was kind of a takeoff of American Bandstand. It was really the how American Bandstand got started. I forgot what the movie's called. But I know that it was like getting up in the morning and doing like 100 kids who most of them didn't brush their teeth. In 1960s makeup, so we used a ton of eyeliner. You know, bubblegum pink lipstick, and you know, everybody had beehive hairdos because they were dancing, so they were real fashion forward. What was that movie called? Oh my goodness gracious, I have to look at my resume to see what it's called. So that was a period movie, and you know, doing the research, and that's when I realized there was nothing out there for me to find on darker skin tones. And in hunting for stuff on darker skin tones, I ended up finding Jet Magazine, the original Jet Magazine. So I have a collection. I have about 50 Jet Magazines when they were, I'll tell you how much they cost at that time. I have about 50 Jet Magazines, and they cost 20 cents. So I have Jet Magazines from 1960, and they were about maybe 8 inches by 4 inches, very, very small. And they were great. So those were, you know, some of those were for research. You could see the hairstyles. More than the makeup, you can really see the hairstyles and the fashion in a lot of them. But all of that is research. All of that is research. All of that is crucial. So I collected anything that would give me some accurate information is what I collected.
and I bought books. Okay. And a lot of my books I bought during Black History Month, believe it or not. For darker skin tones, a lot of my books I bought during Black History Month because that's the only time you would see those books.
Right.
So, and a lot of them are out of publication now. And, you know, I bought things, some of the books that I bought, which were, you probably might be able to find some of them on Amazon.com. I'm not sure. But I tell you, some of the books I bought were like books called Aristocrats of Color. You know, things like that, books that would help me see what somebody looked like back in the 1800s. So I have a lot of photos like that. I have, you know, you have to go through yearbooks. You have to go through people's family albums. You have to go to thrift stores and yard sales and when people are selling out stuff and junk stores, and that's where you find stuff. I mean, I have a book, and I only saw this in once. This one was on Black, I'll tell you the name of it, Black Cowboys, I think. I think that's what it was called. It was on Black Cowboys. And you know, because you never know when you're going to do something that involves Black Cowboys. So those kind of books I bought. I mean, all sorts of things like that, things that would help me become a better artist because I had actual, factual information.
Wow.
I bought a lot of music books. A lot of I have this book is really great. This one is called The Black Performers in Motion Picture. It's Black Hollywood by Gary Null. Then I had Great Women of the Struggle, Book of Black Heroes. All sorts of Hollywood kids, Hollywood glamour portraits. You know, anything like that that can help you.
Right.
You know, Motown 25, that's got great photos. You know, all those kind of books. That's what I spend my money on, you know. And when Barnes & Noble and all these stores are having sales, that's the best time because then you're able to get some of these coffee table books for, like, as opposed to paying $40-$50 for them, you get them for $5. So I have a huge collection of books like that. You know, even sometimes places like Tuesday Morning, they have sales. You know, you can find great TV books and things like that. You know, things with Lucille Ball and how she applied her mouth. And, I mean, just on and on and on and on because there's such very definitive looks for each period, how the lipstick went. Was applied in the 20s as opposed to how it was applied in the 40s or in the 60s, you know, how the blush was applied. All of those things make a huge difference in defining the period, you know. They all made a difference in defining the period. You know, I have movie, you know, like To Sir With Love, where you can see how the movie, which was made in 1960. So you can see how the makeup was actually done back then.
And I have period makeup books. I have a couple of period makeup books myself, and I'll post them on my Facebook fan page. One of them's out of print, but one of them is fairly new, so you might be able to catch that. And it's pretty cheap, probably like $19.99 or something. But it goes into everything, even eyelashes for the period. So, you might want to check that out.
Exactly. Well, that's good.
that's something you don't really think about. That's something people don't really think about. I mean, we talked about the placement earlier and things like that and the different colors, but, I mean, who's thinking about eyelashes?
Eyelashes make a big difference. I have a lot of I have hand-tied eyelashes, and I also have hand-tied hairnets. Hairnets for the period. And, you know, when you do a period piece, a lot of times the prop master will come to you to check out any of the props that the actors are using when it comes to the makeup or the hair. They want, because they're relying on you as an expert to say this is the correct thing that they would have used.
My friend in California, Donna Mee, who owns Empire Makeup Academy, she has got the largest collection of period anything I've ever seen in makeup. It's unbelievable. So if anybody's in California, you should go down to her school and look at her collection. It is phenomenal. Not only does she have the product, but she also has the ad that the product is about. I mean, she's got all the ads. It's just amazing. So whenever I would teach a period class at her school, I was able to pull all of that stuff into the classroom. It was just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It was really
unbelievable. And, you know, there's a makeup artist, I forget the correct name for it, but there's a makeup artist museum in Hollywood, right off of Hollywood and Highland.
Oh, that's the Max Factor Museum.
Yes, the Max Factor, yes.
Max Factor Museum.
They have a very nice display as well.
Well, you know, Max Factor, when he did, he had different color rooms for each actor because the blondes had a particular color room, the brunettes had a particular color room, And the redheads had a particular color room.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
Because that made, you know, he did them in colors that were much more flattering to their skin.
Flattering.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Now, I want to announce the winners of the contest in 4 minutes, but Marietta, my sister left me with some questions that she wanted me to ask you, and a couple of them you've already answered. But she asked, one of her questions was, within a certain time period, how different is the first 5 years from the last five? Do you understand what she's asking?
Yes, because a lot of times in period makeup, you've got the initial first 4 years. Then that fifth year, you start to see a change. And then the latter part of the period, you start to see another change. So you have the beginning of the period, the middle of the decade, and the end of the decade. So the early 40s and the late 30s and the early 40s merged together, the mid 40s, and then the late 40s and the early 50s. So some you see more definitive change than others. You know, some are more subtle, but some you see some very definitive changes. Like the late 60s, some definite changes. Then it went right into that 70s, where you really, because that late 60s, the 60s was a time of so much change in the country, and it's all reflected in the whole fashion look. So you start to see, you know, the early 70s, the late 60s to the early 70s, all the Black Power, People Movement, Jesus Movement, Love, Child, all of that stuff, that merged into the early 70s, and you got your afro and your mini skirts. But by the late 70s, the mid to late 70s, you had maxi skirts, not mini skirts, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So you start to see all of that difference. So, yeah, there's some very definitive changes in some periods more than others.
All right. That was a pretty good question. So I said it a couple minutes, but I'm going to go ahead and do it right now. So going to announce here the winners, and everybody knows that you will receive one of the new Green Line brush collections from Royal Lang Nichols. What we want you to do is we're going to announce 6 winners. These are the 6 people who came as close to the total number as possible without going over. There were a couple people who did go over, so if you're thinking, my number was higher, you can't go over. You cannot go over. So these are the 6 people who came as close as possible without going over. And also, we want each person who we call, we want you to send a brand new email. Don't send it on the email that you sent initially. Send a brand new email with your address, your phone number, all your contact information, and we will make sure that you get your brush set, okay? Tanisha Cameron. She guessed 893. Janelle, I didn't have a last name for you, but you are Etc. Beauty. Janelle of Etc. Beauty, 875 was her guess. Kara Keaty Wooders, she She guessed 875 as well. Jennifer McCollum, 818. Iris Sealer, 795. And then we had Sophie Washington, 727. So those are our six winners. Tanisha Cameron, Janelle of Et Cetera Beauty, Kira Kitty Woodard, Jennifer McCollum, Iris Sealer, and Sophie Washington are our top winners. And the total combined number of brushes that my sister and I own is 895. So Tanisha Cameron was extremely close. She had 893, yep. And the total is 895. What was that, Marietta?
You own 895 brushes?
My sister and I together. Together own 895 brushes.
Oh,
don't
my
even
God.
Ask.
Wow.
But that was a total. So you guys will be receiving a very new brush collection from Royal Langnickel. So we will announce the winners again on our Facebook group page. I'll put it out there on Twitter just in case anybody missed it. But we need you guys to email us on a brand new email all of your contact information so we can get them mailed out to you. Okay. Back to period makeup. Now, Marietta, you shared a lot of information with us tonight. I'm looking at everyone's responses in the chat room. I heard Viola said, you know, when you come to Chicago, and I've kind of chatted that we're going to do a class in Atlanta. That's the first stop. We haven't even made any decisions about where else, you know, you want to do the class, but I'm just encouraging people to take the class when they hear about it because this is nothing compared to what you're going to get in the class. The class would be 2 days hands-on, so you would actually be working some of the time.
Working.
As well. Yes, working, trying to get it right. So I encourage, you know, a lot of makeup artists, you know, and it's not just something specific to film and television. I mean, that's where you see it for the most part. But, you know, you could be on a photo shoot, and they want you to create something, a look from the 20s. You still need to be able to apply the same concept. You still need to know what it is that you're doing. This time it may just be for one or two or just a few people, not for a whole film, but still the same concept apply. And I think I heard Viola ask the question earlier, you know, like, if I'm correct about this, I think one of her questions was, you know, pretty much, are you applying the same concept, whether it's theater, film and television, photo shoot, and, you know, of course, the answer is yes.
Yes, most definitely. You have to do the research. You have to do the
mm-hmm.
research, and then you have to, it doesn't change.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't change. It doesn't change. And the biggest thing is getting your research accurate. That's the biggest thing. And I just want to touch a little bit about the class for a second.
Okay.
The class, the hands-on part is really for you to get your hands wet and understand how to apply and how to adjust those colors to suit the skin tone that you're working on, and how to make it look as natural as possible. Because when you look at something like Eve's Bayou, the biggest thing in Eve's Bayou was to do Lynn Whitfield and have Lynn Whitfield look as natural as possible. Now, I used probably about 5 or 6 eyeshadows on Lynn Whitfield to make her look like she had nothing on, which is not easy to do.
Right.
That's probably like the most difficult makeup. When you look at her and she's all dressed up in the party scene, it's like I've got so many different eyeshadows. I use a lot of cream blush and cream eyeshadows to create a lot of my definition and to sculpt the face with before I applied the powder. Eyeshadows and powder blush and stuff, but there was a lot of sculpting going on to make her look as natural as possible
but and as flawless. It basically, she just had to look like she got up and put on a little bit of Maybelline eyebrow pencil and some red lipstick. That was like the whole key. But that look was almost an hour and a half. And custom the foundation to suit her and stuff. And she looked flawless in that movie. You know, I was very, very proud of how she looked. She looked really flawless. But it takes work.
It's always a beautiful thing when you see the end result. I mean, you know, like when they come in with the wardrobe on, you can, you know, you're getting there. You can kind of feel it already. And then they go through hair. And then, just like you said earlier, it's the wardrobe and the hair, it pretty much sets the tone. Once that's done, you just go in and do what you have to do. But I have to say this to you, Marietta, because, you know, I love that movie, Malcolm X, and you know, I know the story. I know that, if I'm not mistaken, I thought that they were considering Lawrence Fishburne for the role, I believe. I saw it one time.
Really?
But they chose. That's what I read before, yes. And, you know, he's lighter, he's redder. Probably would have, as far as his skin tone, maybe would have been a little easier for you, I don't know, to transform. But I have to say, I remember sitting in the movie theater. At that time, I was not a makeup artist. I wish I was, so I could have possibly been working, but I was not a makeup artist. And I remember watching that movie, and it was just jaw-dropping because I was like, oh, my God, Denzel really looks like Malcolm. And I've heard you talk about it several times before about, you know, just trying to get it, you know, right and get it there. And, you know, like I'm just saying, when you said Lynn Whitfield was an hour and a half in makeup, I just thought about it. Like, you know, a lot of people don't realize sometimes it takes a lot of time to get that look, you know, working with it, you know, just working with the makeup, getting the coloring right, just making somebody look like somebody else when they don't really look like them at all. You know what I mean? Like, if you were to say, Denise, I'm going to make you look like Denise, then of course that wouldn't be too hard. You know what I'm saying? But to take a total stranger and make them look like Denise is something totally different. You know, so I just had to say that that was one of the things that I really noticed and paid attention to in that movie, how much he really looked like Malcolm, or at least, you know, from the pictures that we've seen over the years of Malcolm back in that time. But
yeah,
you're right,
yeah.
It takes time and hours. And a lot of times on movies, you don't have that time.
We tested, we actually did. I want to say about 5 or 6 makeup tests on Denzel.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to test the hair color. And the hair color had to be done so that it was complementary to Denzel, because Denzel's hair is jet black, but yet believable enough where it wouldn't distract you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It took so much to get that hair color right, because since his hair is so dark, it was stuck in the orange stage, like 5 stages. Oh, gosh. I brought in every hair care expert from Clairol to do his hair color, because we had to get that color right. The mustache, and, you know, Victoria Woods that made the mustaches and sideburns and the wigs for us. But it took a lot of shooting, and then the DP wanted to have the, each era had a different look, a different lighting set up. Each era had a completely different lighting setup, so that was very, very difficult to do, because the 1940s had newsreel lighting. That's the other thing that you have to be conscious of when you're doing period stuff, is the lighting. The 1940s had very sexy nightclub lighting, which was real sepia. And to get that, he put black stockings over the lens, which darkened Denzel by 2 to 3 shades. So I had to lighten Denzel by 2 to 3 shades to compensate for the change.
Mm-hmm.
It made a huge difference. So I actually used about 5 different foundations on Denzel throughout that movie. Mm-hmm. Because the 50s lighting was newsreel lighting. Very hard lighting without any diffusion.
Wow.
So, so all of that stuff makes a difference. So it's not just, you have to be very conscious of how they're lighting it, because your makeup, the final product of your makeup, has to be in sync with whatever the DP is doing. It makes a humongous, humongous difference. Humongous difference.
Right.
So,
and I mean,
really,
and I know that we have to, and I know that we have to always pay attention to lighting. But I guess I never thought about actually the type of lighting for that period.
Oh yeah. It makes a huge difference. You know, it makes a huge difference in how things work. You have to understand what the end result is going to be. And I mean, because I think when I did Malcolm X, I was one of the only people on that set who'd had as much period experience as I had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to work really closely with the DP and very closely with the camera operator, because that camera operator is seeing everything.
Right.
And I know there was one scene where they were shooting Angela. And I also requested OB lights, an OB light for Angela and for Denzel, because they both, to make them look older is not a problem, but to make them look younger is a problem when they both have a little bit of, you know, darkness, or, you know, they can have a little bit of shadows under the eyes, and that can age you considerably. So to eliminate that shadow, the OB light is really the only thing that does that. And so I requested that light, which is a very small light that's placed in front of the camera, and it really obliterates all that heavy shadow that actors can have. It creates the most amazing beauty light on the actors. And so I had to request that. And that's something that a lot of makeup artists don't know about. And if you don't do that, you can't make an actor look younger. There's no way for you to do it. If the actor's a certain age. And I remember looking at Angela and I'm going, you can't make her, she doesn't look younger. You can't shoot her like this. And the DP was like, well, what's the problem? I'm like, Spike, we can't shoot her looking like this. She doesn't look young enough. And, you know, that's me putting my mouth in somebody else's business. But I tell you, it took him an hour and a half to relight that whole scene before they shot her. If I hadn't said anything, she would have been shot the way she was, and it wouldn't have worked. Then, you know, in dailies, when they watch dailies, then they go, make, why didn't you do something? So makeup always gets blamed for those things. So it's like, we're only limited in what we can do.
Right.
You know, so it makes a huge, it's so much more than just sticking on makeup. You got to know what you're doing. And that's why a period makeup class is so crucial. And you know, one of the things that will probably be a little bit different in the period makeup class that I'm doing is that the hands-on is going to give you all the practical knowledge. But before you do the hands-on, I'm going to do a little bit of seminar work via the Internet with the students who sign up for the class, so that when they get to the class, they've already done some prep work, and I've already done some research, so that it'll really make it a lot easier to execute the projects for them. And that's going to be crucial in this class, because there's so much to learn that you can't possibly cover it all in 2 days. But having prep work will give you that chance to really do the research first, and then you get a chance to really practice what you've been researching. And that's going to make a tremendous difference. Hello?
Absolutely.
Oh,
yes, we're here. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, so I, 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 you well, know, I hope. hope our listeners are really eager and excited about doing and understanding what it's like to do period stuff, because, you know, one of the things in the class, too, is to teach, makeup artists how to give your character a life. Because in order for you to do your makeup effectively, you have to be able to give your character a life. Because 99% of the time, that character's life is not scripted in a movie. You know? So it's just not scripted. So you have to be able to say, okay, my character is, you know, suburban housewife, dancer, or housewife by day, hooker by night, lawyer in an upscale New York firm, lawyer in a, you know, country firm.
Mm-hmm.
All of that makes a difference in how, what kind of makeup you use. You know,
that's
all
right.
Of that makes a huge difference.
And
so,
and not only that, not only giving the character life and knowing who they are, but like you said, it makes a difference in what makeup we use. But then once we find out who they are, we have to make sure we know how to use the makeup that we, you know, that we
exactly.
use.
Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of times, you know, if you've never been taught that, you don't know what to do.
Right.
You know,
right.
you don't know what to do. It makes such a big difference. It makes such a big difference. And you know, I am always eager and excited to learn new things, and you know, it just makes such a big difference when artists understand what goes into to making that look as authentic as possible.
Right. Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our show. I mean, we could go
fast.
On and on and on about this. I know it was fast. But I love this. I really love this topic. We're going to have to do this again, but I do encourage those who are listening, those who are in the chat room, if you could take the class in Atlanta, that would be great. Like I said, Mariana hasn't decided, you know, what she's going to do beyond Atlanta. I'm sure there will be more. We just don't know where. So just stay tuned for more details. I think it'll be well worth it if you're interested to take the class. I can't think of a better person to teach the class. So I can just promise you that you will get your money's worth, that's for sure. So if you get a chance, take the class in Atlanta or stay tuned for information on future classes. But thank you guys for listening. Congratulations to the winners, Nicole. I know there's some issues, so we'll work it all out and see what's going on there. But, again, thank you guys for listening and have a wonderful night. Thank you, Marietta.
Thank you. This has been great. Congratulations to all the winners.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.